Be bold. Take risks. Lead by example. Believe in your power. Say what you feel, mean what you say. Hi, I'm Leslie Ann Sion, host of the new podcast series, Sion 180. I came across these powerful expressions in an Instagram moment while prepping for Sion 180. They really resonated with me as the justification for embarking on this exciting new venture, Sion 180. Sion 180 is a platform for frank, fearless, and fun discussions that move you beyond neutral to help refuel your drive at your pace, no matter the age or gender. Get ready to go the distance and make changes that are necessary to be your best self. Join me at Sion 180 on this journey of discovery and advancement. Hello, everyone. Welcome again to Sion 180, the podcast series where we encourage our audience to get in gear and move beyond neutral. I am your host, Leslie Ann Sion. On this episode, we will be discussing financial health. Money matters. I invite you to check out my website at sion180.com or visit your favorite podcast streaming sites for current episodes as well as past shows. You can also visit my Facebook or Instagram page for weekly updates, tidbits, advice, and interactions with me, your host, and fellow listeners. On the last episode of Sion 180, we had the pleasure of chatting with Dr. Carol McIntosh, Director of Hospital Services in Grenada, who discussed women's health. Dr. McIntosh encouraged us to normalize certain words related to the female anatomy and female health, and for us as women to embrace and own our own bodies. Thank you, Dr. McIntosh, for enlightening us all and for what is undoubtedly a robust and learning experience that I'm sure our listeners thoroughly enjoyed. Today on the show, I am so happy to welcome Melinda Peter, a daughter of Barbados, author, teacher, and financial consultant, who from a very early age had a keen interest in money. Melinda believes that businesses are often birthed out of the business owner's personal experience, and it is with her mistakes, knowledge, and experience that she desires to see others make sound decisions with their money. She sees her role as that of an architect and is committed to the shaping of financial landscapes for men, women, boys, girls, businesses, and nations, teaching families and individuals to manage their money and to create wealth. I'm excited that she's a UWE graduate. She's also an author of a children's book, Lampy the Lighthouse. She is also the host of an educational broadcast series giving personal financial tips. Welcome, Melinda, and thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you so very much. Great to have you.
I'm so proud of you as a young female Caribbean entrepreneur embracing the topic of money matters and giving us financial tips. And I know our audience would be really keen to hear how we start off with this. So I know that you have over 15 years of experience in the financial industry, being a Caribbean entrepreneur. What are some of the issues and the taboos that you have experienced when advising clients about their finances?
I think that some of my clients were exposed to financial literacy at a very early age. I often hear this comment from many people that I've met. Where were you when I was growing up? Because, you know, if I had this information that I do know, then I would be able to be in a much more stable financial position. And I think there's this taboo that we shouldn't teach our children from young. I think the unnecessary worry would be that, you know, if you teach them about money, it will make them greedy, or if you expose to them what's actually happening in the home financially, then, you know, you would be actually sharing too much information. And I think that is something that we like to keep private in terms of our money matters. We don't want to let nobody know exactly what's going on. But I strongly think that the family dynamic could be strengthened in which you actually communicate openly, like, these are the financial commitments we have on a monthly basis. So therefore, these are the things that we need to look at. Because if you come from a home and you're not accustomed communicating about money, then when you're into a committed relationship or into a marriage in particular, then you would not be so open to have that discussion about money. So it definitely starts in the home and really teaching and training or equipping our children from young, because it serves them well in the long term, especially when they begin their own lives.
Yeah, I think that's very important. You're talking about it from the foundation, the genesis of the problem, one, and then secondly, the genesis of where we should start to educate from the time we are children. This idea of us in the Caribbean being so shy and hesitant to speak about money openly, what do you think has caused that? Because it's still prevalent today.
Yes, it quite is. I think it comes down to, we have this level of pride, and it's a good thing, but then it could also be not such a good thing, in that you don't want to let anybody know this is what you're going through. And I think also you're worried about what people would think. And I think there is an essence of shame as well, because you're not sure as to how people would receive you, but most importantly, how they would perceive you. So it's all about how you look. And if you don't take care of that, then you can't necessarily go and have the conversation with your creditors, for example, should you be in a little ticklish situation and you're not able to meet commitments. So it's important to be free enough to be like, you know what, I'm going to be a little vulnerable. I'm not going to hide. I'm going to let you know this is where I'm at. And could we work out a possible plan? So there's definitely an element of pride and shame, and it may have been stemmed from how you would have been raised and how you would have been brought up, and certain scenarios would have ended up you feeling a little ashamed or be made to feel as though you are wrong for feeling that way, or you're inadequate that you're in this position. So I really think that it's a generational cycle that needs to be broken.
I agree with you on that for sure. I mean, I think, for instance, about you as a young woman embracing what we would call a hard topic, finance and business. And we've just celebrated International Women's Day. And I'm wondering, what kind of reaction do you get perhaps from your male counterparts as you project yourself to this financial leading expert status? And what do your clients, how do your clients respond to your advice and your tips?
Well, ironically, my client base is more women. So I find that women are more perceptive to coming out and taking care of their matters. But I've had a few male clients who would have come to me as well. So that's changing, I find. I think that I would have felt a little intimidated when I first started coming out in terms of being a woman in finance. And I know it is a very male-dominated industry. Yeah. And I've had to figure out what my voice would be. And I find that my message more so is really about the psychology behind finance. Because sometimes we think that the money is the issue, but we are the issue. The mindsets that we carry and all of those different things. So I find that people are more perceptive in terms of actually looking at themselves internally and really figuring out exactly what it is that's going on with me. Why can't I move from a particular financial status to a much healthier financial status? So I know that I'm an intuitive as a woman, and that I have that gift of empath as well too. So I'm able to feel people out. Generally, when I meet with people, I see the person first before I see the money, because I make it my business to find out where you've come from, what was your financial situation while growing up, what examples did you see. So once I'm able to see what the family financial background was, then I'm able to help them to understand and see this is where your pitfall is. It could be because of you would have seen particular examples in the home. Like, for example, the rule of thought would be that the man is supposed to be the one that's earning the most money, but the woman shouldn't be earning more than the man. So there are different mindsets out there. But I think what uniquely positions me as a woman is because I'm able to perceive and discern where the person is at so that I can help them transform their money mindset so they can win with their money.
I love the way you integrate emotional intelligence into the intellectual aspect of financial advice. And as I hear you talk, I realize we're getting to that theme that you spoke about at the very beginning, which is teaching our kids from a very young age about money and how to handle money and, you know, spending habits, etc., so that by the time they get to an adult, they have some basic skills. Can you tell us at what age you think as parents we should start to give our kids tips? I mean, I remember growing up, that was hardly discussed in the household. I think when I look back on my parents, I had two extreme ends of the spectrum. I had one who was a saver and one who was a spender. And so that kind of philosophy for investment was lacking, and that discussion was never really had as a child. So what can we do now with this young generation? Where do we start? How do we start with them?
From, I think, 4 years old, that you could be
really
them. Yeah.
As a toddler.
I would have visited a summer camp where I was invited to teach them about money. And the idea came to me to use the envelope system. And I think most of us are aware of what that is where you put money into labeled envelopes for varied uses. So you put money in an envelope for rent, you put money in an envelope for utilities. But then I thought, let me make it color coded, because then it would actually raise their awareness and make them feel comfortable, you know, at that stage that they're at, that they could actually manage money. So I have three envelopes, one for giving, one for saving, and one for spending. And I gave them $5. So I asked them, what would you do with the money? How much money are you going to put in to giving? How much money are you going to put in to saving? How much money are you going to put in to spending? And they didn't know exactly what to do, you know. There would have been a few that were like, okay, I'm going to put all of the money in the spending envelope because I just want to spend money. And then there was actually one that I remembered where they actually put all the money into giving. So you could tell that they're a giver. But then there was a few that were quite sensible. They're like, okay, I'm going to put some put a little towards giving and then put the rest of the money into saving and spending. But then there would have been a few who would have equally put as much as possible, some into giving, some into saving, and some into spending. So it just showed me that they actually do know what value money has and what money could be used for. So it's about training at your child from early and instilling in them that discipline, not that you're trying to put pressure on them to be right all the time, because after all, budgeting is a lifetime practice. It is something that's you're not going to get it right. In particular situations, in varying circumstances. But if you could jumpstart their financial learning from early with that, it could really empower them in the long run.
I think so as well, because when you think of our kids growing up, they're hitting the teenage years, they're preparing for CXC and heading on to university. And, you know, you're talking about how do we prepare them for handling the life, perhaps outside of the home, even outside of the country. Mm-hmm. And you're suddenly flush with money, whether it's through the parents or through a student loan. And you have had no idea how to budget and think about having this money stretch over a 3-year or 4-year program, as it might turn out to be. What are your tips for parents of teenagers who are about to embark on a tertiary career, even outside of the country?
The thing is that they're of a particular mindset. When they receive money, it spells independence for them. And it also spells independence from the home. So it's just a matter of, yes, you can let them know they have a certain level of freedom, but then it comes down to helping them to realize and understand that there are certain levels of responsibility that you have to take up. Not all of the money that you have is not going to be used for, you know, spending and having fun and and splurging it on your friends and on the latest brand. I mean, I even had that moment when I first got my paycheck. I was young, I was not really focused. And what I came to understood was that I needed to take some of that money to invest in furthering myself, in furthering my education, and not just spend it. And then also I needed to develop the habit of keeping it, because it doesn't make sense keeping up with the Joneses. Can I say that? Because sometimes we feel pressured, and believe me, teens and young adults and adults alike feel this level of peer pressure to be spending like everyone. And if you spend up on a particular brand or particular clothes or go to a particular location, then that guarantees acceptance within a particular circle or a particular clique. So it's just a matter of getting them to have that individual mindset where they're literally putting on financial blinkers and determining what their financial course is. So it means, you know, just having that conversation with them, asking them that question: where do you see yourself in 5 years? What would you like to do with your life? What are your goals? What are your ambitions? What would you like to do with your life? And sometimes they feel pressure that they have to be like everyone else, but it's better to really stand out and be a little odd and just do what works for you.
Good. That's good, solid advice. I can tell from listening to you that you have very acute investment philosophies that is important for us to impart to the audience. And so when we think about female entrepreneurs, small business owners operating in the context of a pandemic, what sort of advice do you think we give those who are currently operating their business and those who are desirous of opening a business? What are the key tips that we can give them to embolden them either to continue or to pursue?
Certainly. So the number one secret to running a business is separating your business from your personal, because sometimes you can put all of the money on your personal account, and then you use the money that you earn from your business towards your personal expenses, but then there's no money that you're using to actually reinvest within the company. So it's really important to first of all, register your business name. And there are different bodies across the Caribbean. In Barbados, it's the Registry of Corporate Affairs, where we actually go and register your business name. And then once you register your business name, then you can seek to open a business bank account, which makes it legitimate. And the reason why you're opening a business bank account is so that you could actually put all of the money onto the bank account, because this helps you to steward your money better, especially if you're looking for funding in the future or if you're looking for investment in the future. What they tend to look at, that thing that interests them, would be your bank statement. They want to see the amount of money going in and they want to see the amount of money going out. And that's how I got my company vehicle a couple years ago. I had my financial statements, I had my bank statements, and I showed them exactly what was going on. And based on the activity that was occurring, then they gave me the loan because they saw that I could actually afford the monthly payments. But with respect to using the money that you earn effectively, these are the different things that you can do. You can seek to invest in yourself. You can seek to invest in a particular course that allows you to generate another stream of income that you would not have provided before. Let's say you're in the beauty services industry and you're a custom waxing eyebrows, but then you realize, you know what, maybe I can install eyelashes. So you could seek to get a certification on that. And then that's another revenue stream that you have within the business. Another way in which that you could reinvest into the company is to ensure that you keep the purchase price of the product that you're selling. So if, for example, you happen to be selling a cup and you sell that cup for $5, but you bought that cup for $2, then you're making sure that from every sale that you make, you're holding $2 from that, so that you can use to purchase more inventory so that you can sell. Another way in which you can reinvest money into the company is acquiring equipment. So if you're somebody who prints t-shirts and you press the design onto the shirt, that's time consuming. But if you actually invest into equipment that does it for you automatically, then that increases your productivity levels, and then it allows you to produce more and it allows you to earn more income. And then another way in which you can reinvest into the company is to hire people to do the work for you. Because if you allow them to do more work for you, then you can service more people. The workload might become too much, but then you have somebody else who's well equipped and able to assist you, then you could service more clients. And then that should bring in more revenue stream for you.
And that's where I think sometimes a lot of business owners are shy, that they don't want to take the risk of employing people to assist because they feel it's overheads that they can't afford. Or sometimes they're just, you know, hesitant about bringing somebody else into their business. What if they use the information and then go off and compete with me? How do we kind of settle these very legitimate concerns sometimes for our small business owners and say, but this is the way you expand?
Yes, it is the way that you expand. I understand the concern, and believe me, you have to accept with any level of investment, there's always going to be risk. Sometimes people come on board with great intentions, and then you discover that they do not come on board with such great intentions, but don't let that stop you. I think that, you know, you have to come to the realization that you can't do everything on your own. You have blind spots, you have weaknesses, but if you bring on people who have strengths that can empower you and shield you, because sometimes we may not know how we're doing in the business and we may think that we know what's going right or what works for us, but then there's someone who's skilled in a particular area that could assist you. Over the years, I would have worked with people. We would have done it on a contract basis or a project basis. For example, with producing the coloring book, Lampy the Lighthouse, which teaches children how to manage their money, I knew so well that I was not an illustrator. I knew that I was not a graphic designer. I knew that I was not a project manager because I'm not really good at looking at all the project management details of making sure that this project is done within a particular time frame. So I'm not insecure and I don't feel threatened by someone that has a strength, but their strength adds to the company and helps me to create a product that is complete. So the illustrator did a very good job. The graphic designer laid it all out because I knew I would have been frustrated if I tried to do it on my own. And then I had someone who's very meticulous with the details who helped me manage myself because I need managing sometimes. And then we were able to produce and launch it. We were able to produce it and launch it. So don't be open to bringing in people who have strengths, but you don't need to feel pressure to bring them on a full-time basis. If your cash flow can't handle it right now, you could bring them on a contract basis or a project basis, but you can't do it alone.
You can't do it alone. I can't say it enough. It's so it's critical for audience to get that message because, you know, I'm listening to you and it's empowering and it's emboldening and it's saying, you know, this is how you can succeed. This is how you move from point A to point B. This is how you get out of neutral, right? You have to spend actually to earn more. As far as I can recall, you know, sometimes you have to invest to be able to reap greater rewards. I know that because we're in the pandemic, for instance, there would be a reluctance, you know, to invest or expand. People might be saying cash is king, for instance. Is there any merit to having that kind of mentality at the moment, or can we break it? And if so, how do we do that?
I understand the value of money at this particular point in time because you need to have as much cash as you should. I learned that lesson personally as a business owner over these past 2 years, that it is really important to have cash, in particular reserves for times like these. Yeah. And you have no control over whether somebody purchases from you or not in this season, because everybody's holding on to their money really, really tight. Because it's really, really unpredictable as to how the economies are going to work or grow or shrink. We don't know. So there's this level of fear. I often tell people that financial markets are governed by behavior. So if someone sees that there's something that's going all right within a country, what they're going to do is that they're going to sell whatever it is that they would have invested in because they want to make sure they have the cash on them. But then when they become more confident about how the country is going and how things are much more stable, then they will seek to invest again, and then it increases the value of whatever it is that you are offering. So at this point, yes, you have to understand that some people are tight-fisted, some people are experiencing salary cuts, some people are not receiving money on a consistent basis, but don't let that stop you, because I think in this downtime, things should be a little more affordable, because I know that when there is a downtime in the economy, I know rich people do practice this. They actually purchase. Yes. They actually purchase items at a reasonable price so that by the time things are back up, they actually have assets, they actually have equipment, or they actually have something that they can sell or that they can use to make money. So even if it is you're not able to spend money on equipment or anything like that, just put it on yourself. Spend it on yourself. I'm sure there are tons of online courses that are available online, which could equip you, which could retool you, which could help you be on the cutting edge, be on the effective edge, because there must be something unique about you that you have to offer, and you have to sharpen that. You have to not like become dormant at this point. This is the key time for growth. This is the key time for acquiring new skills. This is the key time to be diversifying. I mean, personally, outside of business finance and personal finance, there's another side of me that deals with identity, helping people figuring out what it is that they want out of life and what they would like to achieve and what's their purpose and how they can renew their self-esteem. So I know that I'm personally open to diversifying and not just staying in one place. And even with respect to personal finance, I know there are different areas of finance that I can become equipped in that I could earn more money from. So I'm determined to remain and have an open mind while I'm working through this pandemic. So now's not the time to sit back and relax. Now's the time to really dig in.
Now is the time to dig in. I like that. It fits totally within our theme of moving beyond neutral. And the excellence of your message there targets me to what I wanted to close off on about the message that you have for our millennials and Generation Z, and how do they pivot and manage their money better for improved quality of life. And for, yes, even potential retirement. It's not too early to think about it, is it? So no. What are some of the takeaways we can get for millennials and our Generation Z folks?
I think that sometimes it's a challenge for people to actually save money and to invest. And the reason why that may be, it may come down to the level of debt that they may be in. And what we learned was that no more than 35% of your income should be tied up in debt. Because if more than 35% of that is tied up in debt, then you don't necessarily have the income freed up to accomplish more and do more with your money. So I think it comes down to figuring out, what are your spending patterns? I often tell my clients, or I often tell people, if you are uncertain as to how you should budget your money or where your money should go, spend some time recording where your money is actually going. You'd be surprised to see how much money you're spending on particular things. For me personally, I was spending too much money on eating out. The excuse was, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm busy, I don't have time to cook. But it was only like around the middle of May last year, I decided that I'm gonna take my health back. I'm gonna make sure that I take care of my body. And because I started meal prepping and following the meal plan and spending less money on lunches, then it turned out that I would have lost 28 pounds by the end of last year.
Congratulations.
So, thank you so very much. So it's these little things that you need to check up with your spending. So once you track your spending within a month and see where your money is going, then you'll be able to make informed decisions. You're like, you know what? I have too much money I'm spending on subscriptions. I'm going to cut those things down. Those things add up over a period of time. Or I'm spending too much money on eating out. I'm going to focus more of my money into preparing meals from home. Oh, I'm spending too much money on coffee. Well, then I'm going to make sure I bring my coffee from home. So those different things. So you track your spending, and then once you have an idea of where your money is going, then you can budget accordingly. But then also we need to be able to be open to investing. We need to be able to have that mindset that we're going to keep a part of what we earn. We spend too much money consuming, but we're not putting money aside for later. And I often mention this, that there is a story about a guy who would have visited his aunt. It's a true story. And he went into the cupboards because he was hungry. He was outside helping her. And then he went to the cupboard and he saw dog food. And he's like, my aunt does not have any dogs. Why does she have dog food? And then she looked at him and told him, well, the reason why there's dog food within the cupboard is that that's the only thing that I can afford to eat. So she was using that as a means of sustenance. Yeah. So that spoke very soundly to me in terms of the fact that, you know, if you don't set aside money for spending later, especially in your retirement years, you're stealing money from your future self. So it's really critical and important to make sure that you set aside that money. But then what if I'm not working for enough? Then we need to be able to be open to generating multiple streams of income. I'm not telling you to set up 7 streams of income, but look at your skills. Or you may need to get another part-time job. Who knows? The point is that you have particular goals in mind, and we really and truly should be passing down generational wealth to the next generation. So what we do today really and truly affects the generation that's coming after us.
That's right.
It affects you. It affects who's coming after you. So I remember meeting someone who would have told me that I'm not setting any money aside for my children. They're going to fend for themselves in their adult years. That's the wrong mindset. Because what you're doing is bigger than you. It's larger than you. And you have to take personal responsibility first before you can make change. So there are different things you can do. Like I mentioned, just budgeting your money, cutting back on a few things. It may mean increasing your means, earning multiple streams of income. But it's really important to set aside that money for spending later, because you want to stop stealing money from your future self.
I really have to tell you that last sentence that you used there, you have to manage your money because you could be stealing from yourself. And the realities that you can face on retirement could be dire because of what you did in your youth.
Yes.
And so that's the importance of the message that you've given us, Melinda. And I believe our Caribbean audience would latch on to that, because what is charming about what you have imparted today is the practicality and pragmatism that we want our Caribbean audience to understand and take away with. We always get exposed to all the intellectuals, the academics, etc. And at the end of the day, we're wondering, what are we going away with? Right?
Yes.
So this kind of forum is where we want our folks to be able to grasp the crux of what the guest is saying, embrace it, and use that to move beyond neutral. It was lovely chatting with you. Thank you so much for being with us on Sion 180. Keep doing what you are. I wish you all the very best of continuing success in every endeavor that you undertake.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Take care of yourself. Great.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, dear. Bye-bye. I want to thank Melinda Peter from Astrape Finance out of Barbados for joining us on the Sion 180 podcast, sharing her practical advice about money management and changing our attitudes to money, which begins from a very early age, so that our audience is enlightened by the fact that you have to manage your money today so you avoid stealing from yourself in the future. Please join us again on Sunday, April 3rd, here on Sion 180, as we tackle the very complex and exciting topic of leadership and how we can all play a role in giving rise to good leadership, which is so very much needed, particularly in this time in the Caribbean. Thank you so much, everybody. Be safe.